Welcome to AZMcast, a peer-reviewed, evidence-based podcast heavily seasoned with expert opinion. For all you new listeners, I'm going to give you a quick tutorial on how to use this podcast to its fullest potential. For you faithful veterans, you can go ahead and skip ahead to the good stuff. As you listen to this podcast, you'll hear contributors give opinions on everything from practice styles to diagnostic evaluations to emergency medicine philosophy. When you hear the bell ding, that means that the opinion is backed by evidence. Check your screen on your device to see the referenced paper, and we suggest taking a screenshot for future reading. When you hear the turkey gobble, that's just our opinion, and you can decide whether you want to take it or leave it. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the December episode of AZMcast. We have been slowly making our way through procedural sedation in the ED this year, and we are finally to everybody's favorite part, the drugs themselves. Whether you're a fentanyl person, maybe a midazolam lover, or if you're like me and just like to sprinkle some ketamine on everything, this is the time that you've been waiting for. And with so many options and so many combinations, finding the right agent for your patient is like crafting the perfect New Year's Eve cocktail. Everyone has their own preference. Some like to mix, some like to chase, and some just like it straight up. But however you use your cocktail, you need to know your elements. You need to know the pros, the cons, the risks, the benefits, and you need to know how to use them responsibly. So as we close out this decade, man, that's weird to say out loud, let's foray into the fundamentals of sedative drugs, starting with the classics, opioids and benzodiazepines. For all our listeners out there, please have fun this New Year's Eve. Please drink responsibly, don't drink and drive, and have a happy New Year and 2020 to all of you. All right, so the last thing that the ACEP 2014 Clinical Policy on Procedural Sedation and Analgesia in the ED says is, what kind of medications can we use? This is my favorite recommendation that ACEP has ever put out, because the recommendation says, can you use ketamine in the ED? Yes. Can you use propofol in the ED safely? Yes. What about etomidate? Yes. Dexmedetomidine? Why not? Alfentanil? Sure. Remifentanil? I've never even heard of that one. But yes, you can. There were plenty of things that basically they came out and said, you know what? We are good at doing this. We can use nearly whatever you want. Okay. They only mentioned those, but they said that we can use all of these safely. And that's great. And that's what we love so much about doing procedural sedations in the ED, is we get to use our creative right brain to try to figure out what's going on. So your choice of agent really comes down to a couple different things. What are you trying to accomplish with your three A's, which are now four A's? Are you trying to accomplish analgesia, amnesia, anesthesia, or apathy? What is the procedure that you're trying to do? Are you just trying to get an MRI done, which is not painful? Are you trying to put a hip back? What is your indication for what you're doing? What are the side effects to be aware of? And what are your different routes of administration? Because depending on what you're going to use, it may be different depending on what you've got available. So I think the first one we can start with, we'll start with the oldies. Let's start with the opioids. So fentanyl and all of fentanyl's cousins, remifentanil, alfentanil, sufentanil, barbfentanil, margarifentanil.
Is this like the new Brady Bunch? Or
it's like all the Bertos restaurants that we have around Tucson.
Oh, yeah.
Los Bertos, Philly Bertos. You know what you're going to get. It's the same side effect from using all the fentanyls as it will be to going to all the Bertos restaurants. Same side effect. Well, fentanyl will stop you up. But anyway, So fentanyl's one of the oldest ones that we've had. We like fentanyl because it's quick on, quick off. It does not carry a lot of the histaminergic response that morphine would have just on its own. We like this because when we do a sedation, we want it to wear off or kick in really quickly and then wear off. So the for our 4As, fentanyl will give you analgesia. Fentanyl in good enough doses will give you some little bit of anesthesia, but not really the amnesia that you want. They're probably still going to remember what you did to them. And then the apathy. Yeah, and I probably won't care if I got a, 100 mics of fentanyl on board. Sure, I'm fair game for whatever. So indications. When would you decide to use fentanyl as a sedative agent?
When the patient walked in the door.
That's right. Brian does this before taking a history and physical. I forgot.
If you get someone high, it's amazing the history you can get. It's much more accurate. It takes away their lying center. But
so much more honest.
It's so much more honest. Yeah, you really suck. Oh, thanks. Glad I could take care of you. To be honest, I use fentanyl in every sedation. I would say 99.99, because nothing's 100% medicine, 99.99%. I use fentanyl. And I will use it, to me, I mean, my procedural sedation is real simple. There's three drugs. There's fentanyl, there's propofol, and ketamine. Propofol's for short ones, ketamine's for long ones, and they all get fentanyl beforehand. So I have a very simple cookbook for sedation. And I have different ways of using those spices, but that's what I use. I think fentanyl's, a great drug, right? It's your dosing should be 1 to 4 mics per kig. So this is a weight-based dose that and giving like 50, 100, 200 of fentanyl is not unreasonable. The beautiful thing with fentanyl, right? Any opiate, we know how to reverse it. If you gave too much fentanyl, it lasts 30 to 40 minutes. If you gave the opposite drug or your reversal agent, naloxone, it lasts 30 to 40 minutes. You should feel safe given whatever dose of fentanyl you can do, because you can manage that, right? I like agents I can reverse. So fentanyl, I agree with Aaron. It's synthetic. It's, it doesn't have any histamine release. So one of the nice things is it's also doesn't affect your blood pressure as much. So that's a nice aspect too. So maybe you get this, trauma patient, or maybe you had someone who's a little lower in the blood pressure and you're not wanting, like propofol, oh my gosh, I may drop their blood pressure. Fentanyl's a nice thing to give heavy-handed ahead of time to get that pain control, not drop their blood pressure, and then you can just give a little bit of propofol. Maybe you needed it, or maybe you'll switch to ketamine for a blood pressure component. But that's another thing I like about fentanyl. So it is a go-to for me, and I give it before I give ketamine, and I give it before I give propofol. So if I give ketamine, the fentanyl would be in for 5 minutes beforehand, and I'll know what that patient's feeling. I want to get them high. I want them high, I want them happy, and then I can give a little less of the sedative for the amnestic component. Same thing with propofol. I'll give them the fentanyl 5 minutes before I'll start everything. And when I do my INDs, basically every incision and drainage, I try to give them an IM shot of fentanyl in addition to lidocaine that I'm going to try to do. But I try to get them high because that's, I think, also one of the worst, most painful procedures we're doing now.
So I was going to sing fentanyl's praises, but I think Brian did a really good job there. So I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit and kind of throw some caution. With larger doses of fentanyl, particularly when you start getting into that 2 to 4 mic per kilo range, you're pretty likely to see respiratory depression. And when you're combining fentanyl with other agents like propofol, ketamine, it increases that risk of respiratory depression more than any of those agents in isolation. So I'm generally a little bit more conservative with fentanyl. I'm curious about the approach of giving it up front and then giving the sedative. I actually usually do it a little bit differently. I'll usually have fentanyl in the room for when the sedative starts to wear off, if they're still in pain from whatever procedure or injury they had preceding the procedure. But I like that approach. I think it's pretty reasonable. And I think that there's a little bit of evidence out there to support that. The other cousins of fentanyl that we've talked about, sufentanyl, remifentanyl, alfentanyl, They're essentially analogs of fentanyl that are a little bit more lipophilic. They're usually quite a bit faster acting and shorter in duration, and a little bit more potent.
And those are the only real fentanyls. All the other ones I made up. So.
We could throw a few more out there, too. There's, you know, carfentanyl, and they just keep coming up with these fentanyl analogs, man. It keeps us on our toes.
Money in drugs.
Exactly. fun stuff. But yeah, they all are reversible via naloxone. They all carry a very similar side effect profile. The only real difference between them is usually their pharmacokinetic profile and whether or not they're available on your formulary. So,
well, Chris and I know, I like Remy fentanyl drips, and I've had Chris and I have used them before here. It's a great sedation method. In a sense, you have to put them on a drip, but you basically are getting someone super high that they don't care. And so you're giving them, when you do this, you would give them a bolus of 1 mic per kg, and then you have to have a drip going when you give them that bolus. And the drip is usually 10 mics per kg per hour. And so you have that drip running, you give them the bolus, and you just get them high. And Chris and I, when the first time we did this, we were doing this on an incision and drainage on a guy's arm, and I distinctly remember the resident Marcus Boyne was like had his arm behind the guy's head, and the dude was just like, "Oh, this is awesome! Like, what are you doing?" Marcus is like sticking his finger in the wound, like, "He's not moving. He's not doing anything." I was like, "I love this drug." And we were all getting a kick out of it, but it's wonderful because you can turn that on, do your procedure. They're really not losing their airway. They're awake. They're interactive. So when we talk about where are we in the sedation, we're really a minimal, maybe moderate, but they're awake and alert most of the time. And then you can turn it off. It's out of their system in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you can turn it on, get it off, it's not like a 30, 60 hour, 2 hour wake-up time. They're ready to go. And so it's great, I think, for incision and drainage. I've heard it used in chest tube placements. That's another thing. But kind of like painful procedures. I wouldn't use it necessarily in a fracture reduction, but some people do. But it's a nice quick on, quick off way to use it. Unfortunately, and Chris and I keep discussing like how can we get this cheaper on the formulary. But if you don't have it on your formulary, it can be frustrating. It is expensive. I don't know where we're at now with price and everything.
Yeah, last time I looked, it was a lot more than fentanyl. And as a result, it's not routinely available in a lot of emergency departments just because of the cost associated with it. And there's not a ton of data out there where we could say, like, this is exactly where we should be using it. This is how we can justify adding it to the formulary and things like that. So I think a lot of places have difficulty getting it into the ED for sedations. But I agree, it's a nice drug for those painful procedures where you don't need the patient super relaxed. You don't need them completely out, but you just want to kind of take the pain away. So, and like you said, 10 minutes, really short duration. Oh, that's awesome. You can reverse it with naloxone if you really need to. So it's definitely got some advantages.
Just get a couple patient satisfaction surveys after you give the Remy fentanyl drip, and that'll probably get it on formulary. So
definitely.
So I don't use fentanyl much at all as a sedative per se, but I use it as a very quick onset analgesic. So you come in with something that's like, wow, that looks like that hurts. Let's get some fentanyl. So something like a patellar dislocation, it would be the prime example of like, I just want to give you something that, make you feel better now. Something like a burn that's really severe. Let's get you something that you need now. But I do that in order to facilitate the patient's comfort until I can do a sedation. And I don't really use it because of the risks of apnea with everything else that we're going to give as well. So for an actual sedation, not all that much. But I've done it a few times because fentanyl can be given multiple different routes. You can give it IV. You can give it IM. You can give it as an intranasal atomized route. So I'll do that with kids sometimes, especially kids that come in with burns or something where they are just, it's obviously painful. You know that getting an IV is necessary but may not happen right away. Give them a little squirt in the nose and see if they can actually get some pain control from that. And I've seen that kick in fairly quickly within a matter of minutes. So that's kind of where I put the fentanyls in my wheelhouse for, you know, taking care of adults or kids.
Another thing that comes up with fentanyl and its analogs is if you push high doses really fast, you can get rigid chest syndrome, which I've personally never seen after a lot of normal doses of fentanyl have been given. But I think when you start cranking the doses up, that's when you start to see it described in the literature. So I would be very careful if you're going to use those higher doses and just be aware that this is something that can happen. You can sometimes bag through it, but you may not be able to. And if it does happen, good luck. Just kidding. You may need to paralyze and intubate the patient depending on the severity of it and the duration.
Yeah, and your ability always wins.
That's it. And I think we'll probably talk about that a little more with ketamine as well. We start talking about bizarre side effects with ketamine.
So you can't say opioids without quickly thereafter saying benzos, because that used to be all that we had. We had opioids and benzos. What would you use for your RSI? Opioids and benzos. What are you going to use for your sedatives? Opioids and benzos. And so the benzo we typically will use is midazolam. Again, why do we use this one? Quick on, quick off. Great for a drip. Great for whatever you kind of need it for. You can have it last longer, or you can cut it off and you'll kind of get the side effects to go away. This will give you your amnesia, your anesthesia, your apathy, but not your analgesia. And so there's no pain control properties with midazolam. So I'll pose this again. What is a great indication for something like midazolam or some other benzodiazepine?
So I use midazolam. I think, as I said before procedures, I'm wanting to just take the edge off. So those would be NG tubes, lumbar punctures. I'm trying to think of a couple others, but those are the two I would usually give 1 to 2 milligrams. Usually one, repeat it in 5 minutes, one if they want another one. And the nice part with, you know, both fentanyl and midazolam is that they're quick on. You'll know the response within 5 minutes, and you don't always have to give a fast dose or a high dose. You just need to be able to repeat it and be, as Chris said earlier, you bring the drug you need to the bedside and repeat it as needed. We used to do a lot of fentanyl Versed sedations because those are the two fastest agents. And I'll tell you, I don't use many fentanyl Versed combinations, and I can't remember the last time I've done it. It's been a while. I do like Versed also for imaging procedures. So in kids,
that's my go-to for imaging,
like CT or MRI. There's a liquid Versed, and so I will give that. I think that's a nice, you know, on short duration, and usually 30-40 minutes is all you're going to need for the CT or MR if you know you're needing to get that done. I don't use a lot of the intranasal. You could use this. You could use fentanyl for that. And my experience has just been, you know, kids get pissed at me when I squirt stuff in their mouth when I try. And so it hasn't had the effect, and I've had to go to another route sometimes. So I just, in my practice, it's not that it doesn't work. I just haven't had super success in that. But even in adults, I use Versed, say, go into, you want this CAT scan. And they're not happy. And they're like, I'm claustrophobic, and I am not interested in going into some tube that you're putting me in. You know, taking a little Versed and titrating that, or giving, how about we take the edge off a little bit? Then, oh, yeah, I can do that, doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'll use it in that situation. I think Versed is a single agent for a moderate or deep sedation. Sounds like a horrible idea. And I don't have a great answer in terms of when I would use that. I guess if I had nothing else. I would, but boy, that's a...
I would not use that.
Yeah.
I would say, well, anesthesia, all you've allowed me to use is a quite dangerous drug, so I guess you're coming in to do this.
Yeah,
I agree completely. I mean, I can't I'm hard pressed to find a situation where midazolam is the right answer for a moderate to deep sedation. But for anxiolysis, to take the edge off of a procedure, to get somebody to relax enough for imaging, totally reasonable.
I mean, the side effects when you're giving midazolam is really going to be apnea, again, and hypotension. And so the side effects with fentanyl, I seem to remember, were apnea and hypotension. So, you know, if you're going to use them both because you want to accomplish all of your A's, then that's really a bad setup. Just throw in our next one, propofol, and, you know, you've almost certainly going to put somebody's blood pressure in the toilet. But when that was all you had, that's what you used. And so some people were very comfortable with this. But the problem is they were also comfortable with a much higher rate of adverse effects with apneas and hypotension.
And adverse effects that are going to stick around for a while as well. So when we start talking about some of these other agents, you'll notice the duration of the stuff we like is closer to 10 minutes. Whereas if you give a big dose of midazolam, that's going to hang out for 30 to 60 minutes. And if you don't like what it did, you're stuck with it for 30 to 60 minutes. Yeah. So
I remember giving, I've had patients that we had given like 12 or 15 milligrams of Versed, midazolam IV, and 900 mics of fentanyl for like hip reductions. Oh, yeah. You think the post-monitoring on that was a lot of fun? Not a lot of fun. It was a jaw thrust for about
Are you just slapping the patient for like 30 minutes?
Oh, my gosh. It was a monster of a... But I mean, you can get to some pretty high doses with these things. But you also can get in trouble with really low doses. So you need to be careful with that combination.
Definitely.
Yeah, so for me, fentanyl and midazolam are minimal sedation drugs. Mm-hmm. It's what I do to get you comfortable with what I'm about to do for moderate or deep sedation. And so I'll use it for something where I know as soon as I get you the local anesthetic you need, like a lumbar puncture or a digital block on a kid or something like that, as soon as I get you there, you'll be fine. Or something where this isn't painful. I just need to get you sleepy enough to be able to tolerate it. I tell parents, we're going to give your kid a margarita in a syringe, basically. We're going to try to send them down to Margaritaville while they're hanging out, getting their head scanned, and then they'll come back and they'll be fine, you know.
Yeah. It's the same analogy. I was like, this is like a little cocktail.
Yeah. That's it. Enjoy. Without the olive.
No, or toothpick.
Yeah. It's really, really tough to get those through the lure lock. The routes of administration for this, same as fentanyl. So you can give this IV, IM, intranasal. And then Brian's commented as well, you can give an oral dose of midazolam as well. So you have a wide availability of what you can do, which is probably why it's utilized, or why it's been utilized so much, is because you have such a wide range of what you can give. So I did not initially have good luck with intranasal Versed, and I've had far better luck over time as I've tried it more and more, because I think I've been choosier about which kids I was going to do it on. So the kid that has a lot of topical anesthetic on a forehead lack and just needs a little bit to hold still and just to maybe scream but not move, you know, or just kind of be a little like looking at their fingers and saying, whoa, you know, like they'll do better. Or a kid that I just need to do something very brief on, that intranasal Versed it seems to work a whole lot better. It's not working well for the kids that need a fracture reduction. It's not working well for the kids that I need to get a foreign body out of their ear or their nose, because that's really bothersome and they just don't hold still for that.
Definitely. There's definitely a role for intranasal Versed, and I like the situations that you described. A couple tips just to make sure that works well. There are multiple concentrations of Versed available, and you want to make sure that you're using the highest concentration that you have available. Most of the time, it's going to be a 5 milligram per mil concentrated version. That way, you're not trying to squirt this huge volume up somebody's nose and having it not get absorbed all that well. Similarly, you have to use an atomizer. So if you don't atomize the solution and just try to put it up somebody's nose, the surface area isn't right and it doesn't get well absorbed. So if you run it through an atomizer, it really disperses it. You get a lot of surface area that gets covered. Drug gets absorbed really well and it works a whole lot better.
It doesn't work in a kid whose nose is full of snot.
True. Or a kid who blows his nose as soon as you try to shoot it in there.
Yeah, and
it
sneezes.
Yeah. It also doesn't work well with a kid who has a nasal foreign body in place. So. Yeah. But yeah, the kids, there's an age cutoff. It's somewhere around like 2 or 3 where I'm like, look, I'm going to try to fight you with this, and you're immediately just going to cough all this out. It's really good on that kid that's less than 1 mm-hmm. that's like, hi, ooh, what do you have? What are you going to – what did you just do to me? And usually this is personal practice, and based off of things that Chris and Dan and Kate, have our clinical pharmacists in the ED, have taught me, is don't give more than an ml in each nostril. Mm-hmm. And that maxes out at about that same age, because if you're giving more than an ml, you're kind of waterboarding the kid at that point. And you're not going to get the intended effect. They're going to swallow most of it. Mm-hmm.